Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is Joe Healy, and we are here to talk about the College World Series. It is Thursday, June 17, as we record this. The World Series begins in 2 days in Omaha, Nebraska. So there is plenty to discuss in previewing the event, and that's what we're going to get into here on today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast, which is presented by Rapsodo. Rapsodo has become the industry standard in player performance data. Coaches use Rapsodo data as a measuring stick for player development and evaluation. The Rapsodo National Player Database is a free service that allows you to see how you stack up against your peers and provides a pathway to get discovered by scouts. You can check out the Rapsodo National Player Database at rapsodo.com/national-database. All right, Joe. Like I said, we're here a couple days ahead of the start of the College World Series. It's been nearly 2 years since Vanderbilt won the 2019 National Championship. It's time to get things back underway in Omaha, Nebraska, and that's where we're headed in a couple days. The teams are all there already. They'll work out today and tomorrow, and I guess the teams that play on Sunday will also probably work out on Saturday, but we're just a couple days away from kicking off what they like to call the greatest show on dirt.
Yeah, it's here. Like it's almost kind of hard to, like, if it's possible. Like I feel like it's kind of snuck up on me a little bit that we're leaving for Omaha, going to be in Omaha so quickly. But it's also hard to believe that it's been so long since we've been there. I mean, we've spent a lot of time, obviously, in the interim bemoaning not having it last year, but I think it'll be a little surreal to actually be there and be among that crowd again. And it's should be fantastic atmosphere. Obviously, I think there's a lot of, you know, built up demand for this kind of thing. So I think we're going to be in for an all timer in terms of just being a celebration of college baseball, which anybody who's been will tell you that's really the best part of it. That the baseball is great, and that's what they're there to do. The rest of it doesn't exist without that element, but really the best thing about it is just kind of the celebration of college baseball and it kind of having a little bit of a county fair type feel, if you will, for those of us who have experienced, county fair type things. But looking forward to it. Just really, really excited. If I were the type of person that gets, misty eyed about something, I think this would be the type of thing that it would be easy to get misty-eyed about walking back into that stadium, and I'm sure it will be a little bit emotional for me. Just given that it's something that's exciting every year. You know, every year you walk in there and you get excited again, and it's this year I think it will be a little bit overwhelming in that regard because you just missed it. You know, we missed it. There's really no other way to put it. I could try to wax a little more poetic about it, but really I should just say that. Really missed having it in my life, and it'll be really cool to be back. And I think that's part of why it doesn't feel real, is just because it's been so long now. And we just didn't have that last year, and so it'll be really exciting to be back.
I am interested to see, you're talking about the county fair aspects of it. I'm interested to see how different some of that stuff is or isn't this year. There are some differences. Yes, the full attendance is there, and the games will be there, but for instance, the teams practice on Friday in TD Ameritrade Park every year, and traditionally that's open to fans and media and all the rest of it, and like that's just kind of a fun day. There are autographs with the players after they practice, and then there are opening ceremonies that night, and all of that is going to be different this year, or not happening. And a lot of times you'll see send-offs from the team hotels before the games for each of the competing teams. And I imagine those will probably be eliminated this year, or at least significantly different. And so there's a lot that's going to be different, but that's okay, because the main thing is the main thing here, and that is the baseball. And so we're excited to have that aspect of it back, and whatever else we can get back. I mean, because the World Series is about so much more than just the games on the field. It really is an event. It's an event for college baseball fans of all sorts, not just the teams that are playing. There are plenty of people that just want to go and be a part of it and see the spectacle. And I am sure that it will deliver on that again this year, even with some of the slightly more restrictive rules that they're going to be operating under this season.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where, you know, you and I have experienced this just in the way that we've been communicated to by the people who are organizing, and who, I should say, because this might come off as a little bit of criticism, I don't mean it that way. They're doing the best they can. Like they're between a rock and a hard place here. But it's in this kind of weird place where, you know, if this were happening in the fall, like, I think it would just be like, okay, we're, you know, this is a kind of an event back to normal. And because I think largely that's what football has been planning for at this point. And if this had been several months earlier, it would be obvious that, well, we're just not going to do any of that kind of stuff. But right now we're kind of in this weird, like, middle ground where, you know, people are feeling safe to do those kinds of things. I was in a place last weekend in Knoxville where they had some of those types of elements going on around the stadium. But the other part about that is it's not just as easy as them snapping their fingers and being like, okay, yeah, let's just go back to our original plan A, because they've probably been planning for a different eventuality now for a long time. And so it's hard to kind of pivot on a dime on those kinds of things. So they are kind of stuck in a tough place. But I'm hopeful that while it will be a little bit different this year, I am hopeful that we do get some of that kind of stuff. Because one of my favorite parts is, especially on the first couple of days, is just kind of walking around the vendor areas and walking through the tailgate a little bit. I do like to walk through the tailgate areas just to look at, you know, who's got the biggest and best tailgates and the most fun tailgates, or the little tiny tailgates that are two chairs underneath a tree. You know, it's just such a cool experience. I really hope that there is still a good amount of that, even understanding that a lot of it will be a little bit different this time around.
I know I saw a quote from the guy that runs like the concessions at TD Ameritrade that was talking about how it was kind of different, that initially they were told to prepare for 50% capacity, and then they were told, oh, actually it'll be 100%. And just the way that they had to scale up, how that had to happen very quickly. So I'm sure a lot of that was happening around the whole event. Speaking of concessions and therefore food, Joe, I know people that travel to Omaha always want to know where they should be going to eat while they're there. And so before we get into the game preview and the team preview and breakdown and all the rest of that, let's just give the people a couple spots to look for outside of the ballpark. Obviously, Omaha is known for its steaks, and you will hear plenty of people tell you about the Drover. And that is certainly a classic College World Series spot. I would encourage you, though, to look around at some of the other steakhouses, because there are lots of them in Omaha. And while I don't generally I'm not a steak fanatic by any means, but I've been to several of them and they all seem to be pretty good. So, go to the Drover if that's the thing that you've been hearing about and the thing that you want to do and all the rest of that. But if you just want to get some steak, there are other steakhouses in Omaha, and definitely explore that. I would also mention Kitchen Table and La Bavette as two of my favorite places to go and eat when you're in the downtown or Old Market area.
Yeah, I'll throw a classic at you, Lo Sole Mio Italian. You'll hear that one thrown around a lot. It was Augie Garrido's favorite restaurant in Omaha. I am sure
the Longhorns will eat there at some point during their stay.
Indeed. That's one that comes with a little bit of a warning label, though. I would say don't try to, if your team has the early game, don't try to do that for lunch, then hustle over to the ballpark, because A, you will have the grease sweats as you walk up to the ballpark in the inevitable 100 degree heat. But also you're going to fall asleep in your seat. So I would say do that one. If you have the early game, go there for dinner. If your team plays the late game, do that for lunch and allow yourself like a little bit of time to like go back to your hotel and just lay on the bed or lay in the chair in your room or something. And because you're going to need some time to recover from that one. But it is really, really good Italian food. And they, tell them you're there, the people that are working there, tell them you're there for the CWS. They'll want to talk to you about the games. It's a restaurant that very much is in tune with what's going on in the city, in the CWS specifically. I'll throw a different one at you. It's not actually like a lunch or dinner place. I found a donut place called Eat Bob's Donuts. And it's in the roughly in the downtown area, but they do like really kind of interesting things with donuts. They have some pretty plain ones too. Like, it's not like if you're just looking for a chocolate iced donut, you can't get that there. You absolutely can, but they do a lot of the really interesting toppings on the donuts, and they're doing some interesting things with fillings and all that kind of stuff. So pretty decadent donuts. So don't think you're going to go in there and house a half dozen of them, like you might be able to do with just plain glazed from your corner donut shop. These are a little bit different than that. These are pretty rich and pretty sweet, or pretty heavy if you get something with a filling in it. But I bought a few of those and just kind of, kept them in my hotel while I was there last time and kind of ate them over a few days. And they were really, really, really tasty. One place I didn't get to go that I actually would like a live review of, Teddy and I had kind of loosely planned to go to this place and it didn't work out. Teddy, did you eat at the Blackstone Meatball last time you were there?
I did. I think I've been there a couple of times. It's a meatballery. I don't know if that's a great word for it, but they specialize in meatballs, and you can put them on a sandwich or over pasta, or I think a salad. It's a different approach to things. Like, really the meatball is the focus, and then you tell them like, what are we putting this on? It was pretty good.
Yes. Yeah. I like that as a concept, because that for me is like, that's the variety that I would like to have with, what am I trying to say here? Like, I like that it starts with the part about the meal that you really probably care about most, and then kind of talks about the vessel after the fact. Like sometimes you'll go to a place and you're like, well, I really don't want a sandwich because I don't want that much bread, but that combination of like meats and sauces sounds pretty good. Like, I wish I could get that somewhere else. So this kind of gives you that flexibility. It's a concept that I've seen popping out. We've got a food truck here in the Triangle. The name escapes me. But I've eaten at that food truck that does kind of a similar thing. So it is a concept that's out there right now, but I kind of enjoy that idea. So that was one that I wanted to make sure we got on the record. If you gave it your recommendation, it's probably on my list for this year.
Have you had Runza?
I have actually never had Runza. I'm a little bit, I don't know that I'd like Runza, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm scared as well. It's okay. We can, it's a safe space here.
Okay. I can admit that, right. I think. It seems a little cabbage heavy for me. I'm going to be honest with you.
So Runza is like a Nebraska delicacy. It comes from, I believe, somewhere in Eastern Europe. It's like a dumpling kind of situation. They've turned it into a fast food joint there in Nebraska. But yeah, it's if you really want local flavor, like that is what I understand it to be.
Yeah, it's described as a yeast dough bread pocket with a filling consisting of beef, cabbage, or sauerkraut, onions, and seasonings. That's the, of course, the generic version of it. Like, they sell all kinds of different ones at the actual Runza restaurants, but they're everywhere. Like you will not, if it's something you want to try, which I would recommend, it's a local place, like give it a shot. Like, I probably should give it a shot. Like, you will not miss a Runza if you're staying in the Omaha area. They are all over the place.
So plenty of options there for food. Omaha, I don't know how good of a straight up eating city it is. Some people will tell you it's a really good one. I think it's fine. But if you look for it, like, you'll find some good places there. Some of them you don't have to look too hard for, but some of them, if you escape kind of the downtown immediate TD Ameritrade Old Market area, like you would have to do if you go to the Drover or Los Soles Mio, you can find some gems out there. It's an interesting place. And so I they really embrace the tournament there, and so it's always nice to hit up some of the local spots as well. All right, so we're going to embrace the tournament here on the Baseball America College Podcast and break down some of these teams, some of these games here. But first, check this out. All right, Joe, so it's time to break down the games, the teams. We'll run through these in order of how the games are being played here. So we'll start with the Saturday group of games, and that begins at 2 Eastern there on Saturday. Stanford and North Carolina State are going to kick off the College World Series. And then you will have Vanderbilt and Arizona following at 7. Both of those games are on ESPN. Stanford comes into this as the number 9 overall seed. North Carolina State, of course, was unranked, or is unseeded. They were the number 2 seed in Ruston, upset Louisiana Tech in the Ruston Regional, then upset Arkansas in the Fayetteville Super Regional. Stanford won the Stanford Regional, beating UC Irvine in the regional final, and then rolled Texas Tech in the Lubbock Super Regional, another upset there, at least by seeding. So Joe, we've got two teams here that have not been to the World Series in some time. North Carolina State was last there in 2013. Stanford was last there in 2008. Interesting matchup here. You know, two teams that are coming in pretty hot, have not lost a whole lot of games here in the postseason. I think they both have one postseason loss, and they played well down the stretch to get into the tournament as well. So that's what we've got here in the opener. Should be a pretty good one, even if it's maybe not as star-studded as some of the other games that we'll see.
Yeah, it's like kind of one of those classic like games that you knew was kind of destined for that early window. You know, as soon as we saw that this was going to be the matchup of the two teams, especially within the context of the rest of the matchups here. But I think it is interesting. Like it is one of those games that I think is kind of fascinating just for college baseball reasons, you know, for those who are really paying attention to this kind of stuff. I mean, it's a matchup of two teams that I think are going to try to do a lot of the same things here. They're both teams that swing the bats really well. And of course, there's always the question of how well does that translate to TD Ameritrade Park. That's always kind of an open question about offensive teams. And of course, the nuanced version of that is that it depends on what do you mean by offensive, right? So we'll be interested to see how that goes. But also it's a couple of teams that it's pretty important for both to stay on schedule on the mound. You know, neither team has a particularly deep bullpen. Neither team really had to get out of their comfort zone in their super regional for different reasons. You know, one was for Stanford, it was that their starters were so good, they didn't really get pushed in that way. And for NC State, it was that the two relievers they really did rely on, you know, in Villeman and Justice were both good enough in those moments. They didn't really have to play a different card, you know, and in some ways losing that first game in such a blowout was a little bit of a blessing, I think, in some ways, because they probably didn't feel compelled to use some of the arms they would have used otherwise in that game or for as long. And so NC State maybe dodged a little bit of a bullet, and that ends up being a little bit of a silver lining in the end. At the time, though, I'm sure it was not thought of that way. But so two teams that are kind of going to try to do a lot of similar things to try to win games here. So I think that makes it fascinating. I also think the element of what you talked about, that these are teams that, I mean, 2013 hasn't been that long ago, but NC State's one of those teams that is kind of always knocking on the door one way or the other. I mean, they've hosted since then and weren't able to get through, and they're always in the postseason. So it's one of those teams that, sure, it hasn't been that long ago, but also it feels like an eternity because they've had some close calls here and there. So they're eager to get back as well. And then, of course, Stanford having a longer break, one of the classic historic programs in college baseball history that just has had some really good years lately and hasn't broken through. But then before that, really kind of went through a little bit of a valley in terms of production and getting to this stage. So it'll be nice to see that brand back in on the biggest stage in Omaha, because it's been a little while for that group. So I'm excited for this one. Again, it's not going to have the matchup we'll talk about next is going to have a little bit more of the boldface names on the marquee, but this one I think is going to be really fun because I think it's two teams, not only that play similar styles, but also two teams that I think are going to be really, really eager to get this win because I think they feel like it's an opportunity to get off to that kind of start and be able to compete a little bit further into the bracket.
Yeah, I mean, both of these teams have to be happy with the way things break here. I mean, North Carolina State obviously already had to deal with the number one team in the country, and so that's why the bracket broke the way that it broke. But with them not here, with Arkansas not here, you know, and Arizona and Vanderbilt both here as the bracket, like as chalk indicates they should be, this is, you know, the two highest seeded teams on this half of the bracket are playing each other in the nightcap on Saturday. So this is an opportunity for Stanford and North Carolina State to get off to a 1-0 start. Somebody's got to, and therefore, you know, just need one win on Monday, and then, you know, you're playing on Friday with the chance to go to the finals. Like that's what's at stake here is starting starting a really nice 1-0 and being able to set yourself up for a potentially pretty long stay in Omaha. So there's a lot on the line here, and you know, I'm sure they're both going to be happy not to be the ones facing Kamar Rocker. But at the same time, Brendan Beck is really tricky for Stanford. NC State has played exceptionally well here, and you know, over the last 6 weeks plus, and you're looking at you know, some good pitchers for them as well. So yeah, I think evenly matched in some respects. In other respects, they're going to do things a little bit differently, you know, especially in this game with Brendan Beck on the mound for Stanford. They're really going to try and ride him as long as they can and see where it takes them. So I'm interested to see where this game takes them. And you know, it whoever wins this is obviously going to be set up pretty well here, starting 1-0 and then looking at the winner of Arizona and Vanderbilt. So speaking of Arizona and Vanderbilt, that is the nightcap on Saturday. That is one of the marquee games of opening weekend. You got Kamar Rocker, ostensibly, I mean, it hasn't been announced yet, I don't think, going for Vanderbilt. I would be stunned if they went any other way. And then Arizona, you know, coming in here with the nation's best offense. I feel pretty good about saying that these days. So you got the nation's best offense or one of the very best offenses against one of the very best starting pitchers in the country. I don't know how much more you could ask for in terms of a Saturday night game in the College World Series. I mean, this has the makings of being, you know, just a really interesting game to have a play out. I don't know that it'll be an instant classic. I mean, it's possible that Rocker overwhelms Arizona's bats or that Arizona's offense knocks him out early and you get just a result that isn't necessarily an exceptionally close game. But in terms of ways that it could play out, just interest in it, like I think this is a really good matchup, you know, in terms of promotion, in terms of hype, in terms of, you know, just setting up what should be a fun night of baseball.
Ooh, no kidding, man. This is the kind of thing you're really looking forward to if Arizona all season long, you know, looking at this team and looking at what they could do offensively, just kind of like hoping that if they get to Omaha, they end up with a matchup like this, because it's such a good test on both sides. And, you know, it's just a heavyweight matchup, to use that overused kind of cliche in comparison there. So really looking forward to seeing how that ends up shaking out. And, you know, I talked about the question with offensive teams coming into Omaha every year is how does that play at TD Ameritrade? And I think we've, you know, go back to that 2012 Arizona National title winning team. That was a pretty offensive team, but it wasn't offensive in terms of we're going to swing from our heels and try to hit balls out of the yard. I think this team has a little bit more of that than that 2012 team did. However, this is still mostly an offense that's going to look to really drive the ball into the gaps as much as anything else, because sure, TD Ameritrade has a big outfield and it's not the easiest place to get a ball out of. Well, let me tell you about High Corbett Field. You know, I mean, it's kind of a similar situation. Like, sure, the air is thinner and in Tucson and all those kinds of things that make it, you know, a little more offensive in that regard. I get it. But the best Arizona offenses are the ones that can really drive the gaps, can really leg out doubles and triples. And this team can do that. Their doubles numbers are you know, more impressive than their home run numbers, you know, just to put a finer point on it. So I think it's a team that actually is set up to be able to score runs in this environment, because they aren't going to be disappointed because they hit a bunch of flyouts on the warning track that would have been out of their home ballpark. They have to kind of win. The way they win offensively in Tucson is probably going to be similar to the way they'll be able to win offensively in Omaha. And I think that sets them up well. And then of course, you know, Kumar Rucker can put a, you know, can mess up your plans pretty quickly though, if he's on his game, because he's been really good. And it almost feels like he's, for the extent that Kumar Rucker could ever go under the radar this year, like I think there's been a little bit of that because Leiter was so good early and was kind of outshining him a little bit. And then so from that point moving forward, they always get talked about together. And I think that really kind of maybe fails to really take notice of just how good Rucker has been again. And he's lived up to every and exceeded in many ways every expectation we could have had for him coming to campus. So it'll be cool just to kind of see this final run for him in college baseball and see what he's able to do on the big stage again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he seems to really love pitching in the postseason. His postseason numbers are incredible. They were incredible in 2019, and he has done nothing to tarnish them this year, only bolster them further. So, you know, that's a tough thing for Arizona to handle. I think when I think of Arizona and their offense, what's been coming to mind for me lately is, you know, college football coaches love to talk about how multiple they are, like how multiple their offense is or how multiple their defense is. And when you remove the jargon from it, what they're saying is that it's not just one guy that's going to be, you can't key on one aspect of their offense or their defense, whatever it is that they're talking about in that case, that, you know, we have multiple ways that we're going to attack you and we feel good about, you know, beating you in that way. And like 95% of the time when college football coaches talk about it, it's nonsense. Like maybe 95% is high, but like I personally have heard it so many times, like it's a buzzword is all. But this Arizona offense really does have multiple ways to beat you. You mentioned, Joe, that in 16, they were a really good offensive team, but weren't necessarily the big masher types. And this year they do have more of that power. And you saw it last weekend against Ole Miss. They were hitting some absolute tanks in that super regional. So they can do that. But they also, part of their offense being so good is that they drive the ball into gaps and that they can run. And, you know, Donta Williams gets on base and he's a threat. And they have a lot of guys that if you put the ball in the gap, they'll run until you stop them. And, you know, they also are just a really disciplined group that can foul off and fight off a lot of pitches and make you work and get to your bullpen quicker. And then they'll do damage against the bullpen. So it's just a well-rounded group. And I think that all of that will play in TD Ameritrade. Like, I don't worry about them and their offense not playing in a more spacious ballpark. They already play in High Corbett Field, which is a big league ballpark, effectively. It was a spring training ballpark for decades. So they're used to that. And that's why I think that they're not going to be bothered. Doesn't matter what the wind's doing. Maybe the wind will blow out this year and some of these home run teams will thrive. But Arizona is not going to need that to happen. They're going to be able to create offense no matter what, except that maybe Kumar Rucker can stop them. You know, it hasn't happened often this year, but it has happened. And, you know, Rucker is perhaps the best pitcher in the tournament. You know, if it's not him, it's probably either Landon Sims or Jack Leiter. So it's quite possibly Rucker, and you know, he'll get the sternest test he can face right off the bat here to lead things off on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, obviously we'll see, like, we can adjust this if it turns out that way, but I would be, to your point, if Arizona's offense gets slowed down, I mean, using the word shutdown seems implausible, but if they get slowed down, it's just because the pitching is good. Like, I don't think it's going to be a situation where you look back and you go like, well, what they're trying to do is just not working. There have been teams like that in Omaha where they get eliminated pretty quickly. And you're like, boy, offensively, there just was not a lot going on here for a team that's been offensive all year. I have a hard time seeing that with Arizona, unless the pitching is just that good, which is possible. I mean, you're going to face Kumar Rucker, and then, you know, you're one game away from elimination at that point, you know? So That is on the table, but I think it would come because the pitching would just be so overwhelming, and not necessarily because like what they're trying to do is just not taking because of the ballpark factors or what have you.
All right. So that's bracket one. That's what's happening Saturday. Joe, before we move on to bracket two, which of these teams do you think starts 2-0 and advances to Friday?
Boring answer, but I said in the last podcast that I like Vanderbilt's chances here. I think when you're talking two games, because it gets sticky for Vanderbilt after that. And of course, the million caveats of like anybody can have a bad game, yada, yada, yada. We saw Rocker and Leiter be human at times this year. But when you're starting off with those two guys who are, you know, arguably the single two best pitchers in college baseball, like it's just hard to bet against that team going 2-0. Now, if we want to talk about what Vanderbilt does after that point, that's maybe a little bit different discussion. But if you're talking who's going to be in the best position after two games, I think it's hard to go against anybody or hard to go with anybody but Vanderbilt.
I really, really want to find a way to go against you. I want to be like, well, like Stanford, you know, Brandon Beck, and how good was Alex Williams against Texas Tech last week? And like, why can't they do it? And I mean, they could do it. Or like Arizona's offense, like, why not? And, you know, they've got this really good bullpen too. Like they can do it. And, you know, I can make a case for NC State. Like they just knocked out Arkansas. They beat Arkansas back-to-back games. That hadn't been done by any team all season long. Like Arkansas only lost back-to-back games once, and it was two different teams. So like, why can't NC State come out and keep this hot streak up? And I think any of those teams can. I think this is pretty wide open. I think people are probably not going to refer to it as wide open because of Rocker and Leiter, and that's fine. Vanderbilt should be the favorites in these two games. But, you know, I'm just saying, like, I'm not going to be surprised by anything in this bracket. I think that if we had Stanford playing on Friday, going 2-0, NC State going 2-0, Arizona 2-0, Vanderbilt 2-0, like, I'd be like, okay, I get how all of that happened. You know, we'll see. I guess if I'm going to force myself to make a pick, like, yeah, I guess we can't go against Vanderbilt with Rocker and Leiter, but I do think that there's a very reasonable case to be had for any of these four teams for starting 2-0 in Omaha.
For sure. Like, I think that's well said, because I think sometimes we, you know, it's easy to kind of discount the chances that, not only because these teams are so good, but just discount the crazy things that can happen. You know, how many times have we seen, you know, a bad bounce here or there make a huge difference in games, and, you know, some of these runs in Omaha that are a little bit surprising, and just as often teams that make relatively quick exits where you're like, oh, I did not expect to be waving goodbye to this team after 72 hours, you know?
I mean, in 2016, Florida went 0-2 as the number one overall seed. Like, it happens.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, one of the Arkansas teams recently, you know, I forget if it was 0-2 or 1-2, but it was a team that, you know, just made it.
That was 19.
Had to have been 19, because 18, of course, they got, you know, one step shy of a title.
And I think it was 1-2 because they were in the same bracket as Texas, and I think Texas went 0-2.
That's right. Yeah, so.
Nope, I'm conflating that. Texas was there in 18. Yeah, I think you're right. Arkansas 0-2 in 19. I think that's right.
But it's just, you know, the point being, like, this can happen to anyone. You know, so it's a good point to make, because I think a lot of people are going to hear us talk about why Vanderbilt set up to do well and take that as us saying that no one can touch them. And that's not what we're saying. I think you have to look at them as favorites, but anything can happen here for sure.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, not only do they set up very well because they run out Rocker and Leiter, I would also say before moving on here is that the other thing is that you get a day off, and that's really important for Vanderbilt. With you know, being able to use their bullpen, their top two arms, the M&M boys, as they're getting called recently, Murphy and Maldonado, use them as aggressively as you want, because if you do go, you have, in an ideal world, you're probably throwing Rocker and Leiter seven each, and then Murphy and Maldonado probably an inning each, and there's no reason why they, you know, like that's very attainable. But if something went off script, you can use Murphy or Maldonado as aggressively as you want on Saturday or on Monday, knowing that even if you lose, you have an off day. And especially on Monday, then if you win, you're off until Friday. So, I mean, I would be surprised really if we saw anyone else besides those four guys pitch for Vanderbilt in these first two games. Something would have gone I think terribly wrong if something else happens.
Or maybe terribly right, you know, if like
perhaps. I mean, yeah, that's also true. If they have a blowout going, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe you do something else.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to the bracket beginning on Sunday as I clean up. And yes, Arkansas was 0-2 in 2019. So the bracket beginning Sunday, you've got Tennessee and Virginia at 2 o'clock. And then you have Texas and Mississippi State at 7 o'clock, both of those games on ESPN2. We will start with Tennessee and Virginia, the Vols against the Hoos. This is an interesting one. You've got Tennessee, which has been so good all year long and sweeping through both the Knoxville Regional and Super Regional. Really, like, I don't want to say they weren't pushed, because Wright State definitely pushed them 2 weeks ago. In that opening game of the Knoxville Regional. And it's not like LSU rolled over, but Tennessee hasn't played too many tight games in the tournament. And then Virginia, which has been pushed every step of the way. They lost their opening game in the Columbia Regional and Super Regional, but come back to beat ODU in the regional and then Dallas Baptist in the Super Regional. So Joe, I guess the question here is, can Virginia get off to a better start? They'll run Andrew Abbott out there. He's an All-American. Tennessee will counter with Chad Dallas. I don't really understand why Virginia has struggled in opening games here in the tournament, considering how good Abbott has been much of this season. But if they're going to – I would not want to drop the opening game here and then try and make a run to the finals. I think they're really going to need to find a way to get off to a better start to the World Series than they have to regionals or super regionals.
Yeah, I mean, that's really been the weird part about Virginia, is they've been losing Andrew Abbott starts and have still been figuring it out. When, you know, coming into both the regional and the super regional, my thought process was kind of, well, they really need to win the Andrew Abbott starts, because after that, like, we've talked about how good their pitching is and how deep their pitching is, but they don't really have anybody else who does what Andrew Abbott has done for them this year. You know, now they've had guys step up. Griff McGarry was awesome last weekend in the Super Regional. Would you bet on that again? Like, you know, I don't know. You know, Mike Vassell's been pretty good, but he's not been what Andrew Abbott has been. So long story short, it's just, you know, they're really kind of banking on him being good on the front end. And it should be said that he has been pretty good in the postseason. It's not like he's had bad starts. They've just been losing those games. But so that is a little bit strange there on the front end. And it's, I'm with you that I don't, because of they're a little bit more unsure what comes after that, whether it's they you know, put Griff McGarry back out there in game two, you know, knowing.
Well, so the reason why McGarry started game two of the Super is because Mike Vassell threw like, they just piggybacked Vassell and Abbott in game one. So I don't know if they want that to be the case. Like, they can do so many different things with their rotation.
Yeah, they really are. They do feel like a team. That's a good point. Cause they do feel like a team right now that they've got so many good arms out there. It feels like they've been hiding them, you know, all season. And it really is just that they're all pitching better now in many cases than they have all season long. So it feels like they've really kind of hit a peak here. So they are in an enviable position where they don't have to do anything. So many of these teams have to do something, right? So it's like, you know, with Stanford, for example, it's like Beck, Alex Williams, then we'll figure it out. And NC State, it's like, you know, we have our three starters and we have our two bullpen guys and we have to do this. In Vanderbilt, it's Rocker, Leiter, and then we figure it out. Like, so many of these teams are so locked in to what they need to do from a pitching standpoint. Virginia doesn't feel like that at all. It feels like they can do any number of things. I mean, they got through a Super Regional without using Steven Schock, you know, that gives you and a three-game Super Regional, by the way. And they were able to pull that off somehow. And so,
I mean, they used one reliever. Like, I know that two guys had relief appearances, but effectively they used one reliever.
Right. And boy, was Matt Wyatt good.
And like, but Matt Wyatt is like, he has like something like eight starts this year too. Like, they basically didn't use their bullpen.
I mean, they can do any number of things. Like, they can really play this any way they want, which is obviously a big advantage. And truthfully, like, Tennessee has settled into something of a little bit of a feel for what they want to do on the mound, but they're kind of similar, right? I mean, when you talk about, okay, you know, they're probably going to start Dallas and Tidwell. one and two, and you kind of know that's coming. But in terms of the way they handle their bullpen, like, they've got guys. We talked
about
this before.
Except that I know that Sean Hundley is going to pitch the final two innings or three innings. Like, yeah, they mix and match a lot.
Yeah, so it seems like two teams that, from a mound standpoint, like, the teams we talked about to this point feel somewhat locked into kind of what they want to do for the most part. These two teams, though, we could see basically anything from a pitching standpoint. And so I think that makes this kind of exciting, because I think it will feel a little bit kind of like a chess match, and two teams that are going to react to what happens early on in the game to decide how they want to use their pitching. Whereas with some of these other teams we talked about, it's like, well, we know who's coming out of the bullpen first, and we just don't know if it's going to be in the fourth inning or the seventh inning. And so that's kind of an interesting little subplot here. You know, if it becomes an offensive game, I think Tennessee's in a good spot. I think they're one of the more, you know,
I was about to ask that. Yeah, sure. So these are two teams that have been pretty home run reliant in the postseason. Some of that is the ballparks that they were playing at in Knoxville and Columbia are offensive environments. Tennessee's hit a ton of home runs all season long. Virginia probably has been less reliant on the home run, but also, again, ballpark, they play in a less home run happy ballpark. What if the wind's blowing in? Like, how are these teams scoring runs if you take the home run away from them? And if you don't, I mean, like, does Tennessee just have a clear advantage, or could Virginia keep up if the ball does happen to be flying?
I mean, I think if the ball happens to be flying, like, I think kind of all bets are off, because I think you just never know who's going to run into one. And I think Virginia showed that they could win some games that way. I'd still probably go advantage Tennessee. If the wind's blowing in, I actually kind of like, maybe like Tennessee, if both teams are kind of hamstrung in that way, I think Tennessee is kind of one of those offenses that, to use your football cliche term, is multiple. I mean, they are a team that they do like to run a decent amount. They've got 72 stolen bases. It's an athletic offense. Like, it's one through nine, because they do have a couple guys that'll clog the bases a little bit, but you know, they've got seven guys in the lineup who can steal bases, can take extra bases, can grind things out. And it's worth saying, like, lately they've been winning games with power, and that's kind of how they've gotten it done. They have a lot of memorable home runs, I'll put it that way. So I think sometimes maybe it's easy to think that they've actually been a little more powerful than they have been, and they have been powerful, but they've also just got a lot of memorable. I mean, they're
fourth to the country in home runs.
For sure. But they have a lot of memorable home runs is definitely part of that. But there were times earlier this year where, you know, you and I had conversations about, and the Tennessee offense just kind of seems kind of just okay right now. It doesn't really seem like it's clicking on all cylinders. But they, for the most part, kept winning games. And so that's something that the team, you know, from Tony Vitello all the way down to the players, talked about a lot in media and the Super Regional, was that, you know, we had a lot of times this year where the home run ball just wasn't coming, and we were having to try to figure out how to win games ugly and win games different ways. And so they do have that experience. Now, I'm a little bit dubious of, you know, how that sometimes we can look at that as a skill, like having to win games ugly like that. And maybe there is something to that, but I also just think you're allowing luck into the equation if you're trying to win games that way. So I don't think they'd want to do that, but I think it's a team that at least thinks they can win that way. But because I think their offense is just, I think of it as appreciably better than what Virginia has put forth this year. So I give the advantage to Tennessee if it becomes an offensive game. It's just so hard to gauge what Virginia is right now, because what we're seeing right now is just so much of a better version of that team than what we saw for the first, I don't know, 8-10 weeks of the season. So it's hard for my brain to even be able to accurately judge what we're looking at with Virginia, because it's just so different.
I mean, my guess is that this is not going to turn into an offensive game. I mean, you've got Chad Dallas and Andrew Abbott on the mound. Like, you're probably going to have to win this game tight, and it might just be determined by one swing of the bat, regardless of, like, whether the wind's blowing in or out. It does feel like this is probably going to be a pitching oriented game, not like the some of those games in Knoxville that we saw, but maybe a little bit more like what they played in the SEC tournament. There were some times that they had blowouts in Hoover as well. But they played a couple really, like that first game against Alabama, those 3-2, like I could see a game like that here. And yeah, I probably advantage Tennessee offensively no matter what, but it's going to be, I think this is going to be a little more down to the pitching staffs. The nightcap then sees Texas, the number two seed and the highest seeded team remaining in the tournament. They take on Mississippi State, the number seven seed. This is, I mean, everything that I said about Vanderbilt and Arizona and how much hype you could build around that, all of that is true here. Maybe a little less true. Like, I mean, Ty Madden is a really big deal, both as a college pitcher, he's an All-American, and as a draft prospect, he's a probable top 10 pick. But I mean, he's also not Kamar Rocker, at least top 15 pick. I don't, top 10, we'll see. Mississippi State has Tanner Allen, who's the SEC Player of the Year, an incredible four-year career for the Bulldogs. I don't know how much hype you can build if you're ESPN surrounding Landon Sims just because he's a closer. But you've got that guy as well, who's pretty darn good. So you've got some individual stuff, but this is also just two big-time brands when we're talking about college baseball. I mean, I don't need to explain what Texas is and certainly what Mississippi State has been. So this is going to be a really fun one as well. And on the mound, you've got Ty Madden and Christian McLeod in all likelihood, two pretty good pitchers going at it. Definitely advantage Texas on that, though. It's not like McLeod's been bad or anything. He just isn't All-American good. But, you know, it's a pretty strong Mississippi State team. You saw what they did sweeping through the Starkville Regional and then beating Notre Dame in the Starkville Super Regional. Texas has not been tested. I think that's fair to say. They just haven't been tested in the NCAA tournament very much at all. South Florida, they beat them in the Supers, and South Florida got the game tied in the ninth inning. But South Florida, I'm pretty sure, did not lead at all in the Super Regional. If they did, it was very briefly in game two, and I don't think they led at all. And then in the Austin Regional, Texas swept through that with relative ease, I think. I think that's fair to say. So interesting to see what it'll be like. It's just been a while since Texas has really, really faced anything like what Mississippi State can run at them.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point about Texas, because I hadn't really thought about that in a while, that the idea that, you know, it had a fairly cushy regional, no disrespect to podcast darling Fairfield, but, you know, you end up in a regional final with Fairfield. The other teams in your regional were Southern and an Arizona State team that was just.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.